I've got a family member on my mind. Her name is Linda, and she is in the direct path of Hurricane Milton, which is right now a Category 5 bearing down on the west coast of Florida. I won't go into all the technical possibilities. The models are out there for Milton, but what we're hearing from the Weather Channel and other regional and local forecasters is that this storm is a monster, and it could hit Tampa with the type of force and girth, wind and rain and storm surge that Tampa has not seen in more than a century. That's what I heard on the Weather Channel. I've been following some of the updates throughout the night as I can. We know that Hurricane Helene left a large swath of destruction in her wake, and many of the parts of Florida that got hit by Helene, so that's up into the Big Bend area, are now potentially going to get a lot more rain and have to deal with the winds again. Florida is one of those states where everybody knows somebody, meaning those of us in the rest of the United States know people in Florida. It's such a popular destination, not just for vacations, but for people to move for work. Also, retirees and people who go there to live out their later years, maybe a couple of decades, or have vacation homes there. My grandparents had a vacation place in Clearwater. Well, I say vacation. They were snowbirds, if you will. I used to visit them all the time in Northeast Ohio, and that was their main residence. But in Clearwater, Florida, they would go for a few months around Christmas time. And so we would often spend our Christmases in the Clearwater area. My brother was born in Tampa for that reason. Actually, he was born in St. Pete, but Tampa, St. Pete area. And so we're really familiar with that area. And I have one family member as well as several very close friends. One friend of mine who is at my wedding, she and her family are in Orlando. There are a lot of people in the path of this storm. And right now you've got hurricane hunters who are flying into Milton just to make sure they can get as much data as possible. It's expected to make landfall on Wednesday. There's already two mandatory evacuation zones in the Tampa area. And I've seen some of the video of traffic that's moving north to get out of the path of the storm, bumper to bumper, as you can imagine. But it is good to know that people are heeding the evacuation notices. Again, it's expected to make landfall near Tampa Bay or the Tampa Bay area on Wednesday. And according to the National Weather Service, National Hurricane Center, this is a quote, Milton has the potential to be one of the most destructive hurricanes on record for West Central Florida. They were thinking it might make landfall as a 4, but it's already a Cat 5. Hurricane watches, hurricane warnings, tropical storm warnings, and it could end up a tropical storm by the time it hits, say, the east coast of Georgia, on up into parts of South Carolina. And again, these are places that already got hit by Helene. So thinking about those people in Florida, those of you who are dealing with it, please, please, please take every precaution. And if you're in an evacuation zone, I hope that you will get out. It's not easy to replace property. A lot of people have lost homes and businesses and are fearful of losing more. That's always a scare. And I've talked to people, and this happened when I was in Oklahoma as well, when I would deal with tornadoes in Tornado Alley for a few years when I lived there and worked in the news. People think, well, if I can just stay here, I can take care. I can make sure that nothing happens. I can ride it out. I'd rather be with my stuff. I'd rather be in my spot. And that may be true until your home washes away. I mean, there have been some horrific stories coming out of Helene where there are people who are in their homes and they're holding on to each other. And as the water washes away their homes, they're separated. And in some cases, their loved ones aren't yet accounted for. It may take years. I know it's expensive and costly. Homes and possessions, most of them can be replaced. People cannot. So I hope that you'll heed every warning and take every precaution to take care of you and, of course, your family and your pets. The Buccaneers are already on their way out of town today because they want to be able to leave the Tampa area with the storm coming in. That makes sense. I know not everybody has it that easy, right? Not everybody can get on a charter flight and get out of town. And I know in some cases, flights may be full. Hotels are already full. But the Bucs know it's smart to leave today ahead of the storm. They actually play in New Orleans over the weekend. And so they were able to get hotel rooms in New Orleans so they don't have to take another flight on Saturday. But we're talking about maximum sustained winds of 160 miles per hour over the Gulf of Mexico. This type of a storm can certainly spawn tornadoes. And while we don't yet know the exact track, and by we, I just mean following what the Weather Service and National Hurricane Center are giving us, this is beyond catastrophic and could be another deadly storm right on the heels of Helene. Please, please, please evacuate if you're in one of those areas, and please be safe. We will be here thinking about you, worried about you. Of course, we have a bunch of great affiliates in Florida and Georgia, on up the East Coast. And as I say, I feel like most Americans that you talk to outside of the Sunshine State know people that are there, whether family, whether friends. So it's a scary time, bit nerve-wracking to be sure. At A-Law Radio is where you can find me online, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We've got our poll up for TD of the Week as we head into a Touchdown Tuesday. It's hard to leave out some of the great candidates, but we had to. We considered Monday Night Football, but honestly, the one that I would have used didn't quite turn into a touchdown. I'll explain coming up. Also, some defense later in the hour needs to be highlighted because Week 5 had a ton of bright spots for various defenses around the league. Can you believe we're through Week 5? Wowzers. And the Chiefs joined the Vikings as the last two undefeated teams. Derek Carr throws an interception on the opening drive, and with all of the injuries, we know Kareem Hunt is playing a much more impactful role, a much greater role than maybe he ever would have.
Chiefs have first down and goal to go at the 5-yard line of New Orleans. Digging in against this number one red zone defense, given off to Kareem Hunt, following his blockers, he's into the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City, the middle again, blown wide open, and the Chiefs score on their first offensive drive of the game.
Mitch Holtis on Chiefs Radio. And remember, Kareem Hunt is back with the team after he was cut by the Chiefs in 2018 for not being upfront and honest about a situation in his personal life that he ended up serving a suspension for. He went back to Cleveland. He spent a few years there. He's talked about the fact that it was tough to watch the Chiefs win Super Bowls without him, but he's got his first touchdown of the season. Now that he's back with KC, goes along with 100 yards on Monday night.
It was a great feeling to get back in the end zone. I missed it very much. That's why I threw up a heart, you know, to show my love for, you know, Kansas City.
We knew that Andy Reid had said he was in great shape even before they activated him prior to Week 4, I believe. Reid was talking about how he looked like he was good to go. And yeah, he was asked about that on Monday night. How can he be so explosive without really having a training camp and not being with the team other than just these last few weeks?
I'll have to say, you know, I worked real hard still in the offseason, even though I didn't get a training camp or OTAs, but my coach, Matt Luck, man, he put me through some hard, you know, grinds up in Willoughby South.
Kareem Hunt, exactly what the Chiefs need to be able to maintain that running presence without Isaiah Pacheco, who is expected to return. And then thinking about the production that they would have had for Rashee Rice, their wide receiver one until he was hurt. There is good news, though, and I'll just take a quick pause and mention the good news. The fact that he is escaping the worst case scenario with his knee injury, right? So according to the Chiefs, they have a lot of optimism now. So really excited about the fact that they don't believe that knee injury is going to be quite as bad or require the same amount of rehab and recovery time as what they first believed. Now, they're pausing when it comes to whether or not he'll play again this season. Doctors won't know for sure until they do the surgery this morning. So they're going in to get a look. At this point, they are still hoping that the ACL won't require a full reconstruction. They do believe there's damage to knee ligaments in there, but they don't know until they go and do this surgery. He's already on IR. Again, they don't want to hold out hope now that he'll be able to play this season just because it feels like it's going to require some rehab and recovery, but maybe 4 months, three, 4 months, as opposed to an 8 or 9 month recovery with a completely torn ACL. So that's good news. But for now, the Chiefs are looking for other guys who can step up and produce. And the fact that Kareem Hunt has familiarity with the Chiefs, at least with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and his system, that's a major bonus. As is the connection with Juju Smith-Schuster. He had a huge game on Monday night. 7 catches, 130 yards. That includes a 50-yard catch and run that set up a touchdown for them in the fourth quarter. And he's raving about how good it is to be back with the Chiefs because their culture, he says, is perfect.
Man, it's unbelievable. There's no place like it in the world. This atmosphere, everybody just wanting to play for each other, just wanting to win. You know, when you win as a team, you know, everybody wins in the long run. So, you know, shout out to the guys for making that happen.
They're going to need a lot more from him. But when you hear Patrick Mahomes talk about Juju after the game and the role that he played, again, the fact that they've got a pre-existing relationship, if you will, they've got a rapport, they'd already worked on this, that's significant when they've lost so many pieces.
But he has a good feel for the entire concept of the play, and so he knows how to get into the open spots. He has a good understanding of my timing, and so some of those things, I can hit him early, and some windows maybe that aren't necessarily taught. It's kind of just learned over reps. But I think he did a good job today of just doing that, finding those windows, beating man when they played man, and then zone, finding the windows to get big catches.
Juju Smith-Schuster also had a dubious moment on the goal line that he probably would like a mulligan for, but this produced one of the more entertaining moments of Monday Night Football. You already know the Chiefs won despite going 2 for 7 in the red zone. They likely would have had a much larger margin of victory because the Saints did not play well. They didn't run the ball well. Credit the Chiefs defense. They really couldn't get a whole lot going on offense. Derek Carr got injured early in the fourth quarter and he was gone. So they bring in a quarterback they've never used before. So yeah, it was a mess for the Saints and we'll get to their side of it. But the Chiefs, after a slow start to the third quarter, let's see, they missed a field goal. So Butker missed a field goal. Then they're driving the entire length of the field. They get down into the red zone, and it goes horribly wrong.
Mahomes in the gun, the two in New Orleans. Pirine in motion. There's the shotgun snap, the fake handoff, the quick throw at the goal line. It's deflected, and it's intercepted on the play by Saunders. He runs the big man, the 10, near sideline 20, on the near sideline 30. Got a block, and from behind, the former Chief is taken down. The Saints big man got it on the ricochet at the goal line on a pass intended for Smith-Schuster. That was a thick pick.
It bounced off of Schuster's head, and Saunders one-handed it with the left hand, and the former running back looked good getting the ball all the way out near midfield. Of all of the plays that could have happened,
we were just talking about him. His brother dances, he runs. They are a talented family.
Another memorable call from Kevin Harlan along with Ross Tucker there on Monday Night Football because Kurt Warner had gone to London, so Ross was stepping in. Okay, couple of things. Ross continues to cackle, which is amazing. I actually heard this on Westwood One when I was getting ready for work, so I was listening on the radio, and Kevin nails it, the thick pick. He loves to do that with the rhyming and the big man TDs, but here's what you don't get there, only because we can't let the cut run for an hour. The brother to Colin Saunders, who is a former Chief defensive lineman, by the way, the brother to Saunders is a dancer, but do you know who he dances for? Taylor Swift. So he's a backup dancer for Taylor Swift, who is in the stadium last night. Of course, you know this if you watch the game. She's in the stadium. Her backup dancer is a brother to this defensive lineman for New Orleans, who then ends up catching this ball on the carom off the hands of Juju Smith-Schuster, and he doesn't. Even at 324 pounds, he does not collapse. He rumbles through a few guys. In fact, Xavier Worthy trying to tackle him might have been the funniest thing I saw all night. And he ends up going like 35 yards, I think, which puts then the Saints on their own offensive drive. So yeah, fantastic call. Incredible moment. First career interception for Saunders.
They are a talented family.
And he deserves all of the accolades. Ultimately, it's the Chiefs defense that stuffs Alvin Kamara, that doesn't allow Derek Carr a whole lot of room, and that is able to limit the Saints and send them to a third consecutive loss.
Chiefs showing blitz, is selling out, coming after Carr. He throws it up for grabs, left side. The pass will be incomplete at the 10-yard line. Mason Tipton trying to get it over his shoulder. Chamari Connor was with him in coverage. Pressure, coverage, holding on downs. The Chiefs lead by 10 and have it back at their own 42.
At the end of the day, our defense is playing their tail off, and I think people are starting to come to realize that even more. And so even when we're getting these field goals, they're keeping us in these games. Obviously, offensively, we had a better day today, a lot of yards. Now it's about finding ways to finish with touchdowns in the red zone so we can make these lead bigger, faster, and then we can really let Spags be Spags.
Spags, of course, being Steve Spagnuolo, and the point at which Andy Reid brought him on board as the defensive coordinator really changed a lot for these Chiefs. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You can hear the cheering in the Chiefs booth with Mitch Holtis as the play-by-play. One more moment, just because it's so classic Travis Kelce now, right? So I refer to Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce as an old married couple in sports. They can finish each other's sentences. They've worked together for so long. And Kelce had had a slow start to the season, but everybody defending him. He's getting a lot of the extra attention from opposing defenses. But he also likes to go off script. I mean, we know Patrick Mahomes does that, right? So he likes to improvise. He likes to go improv, if you will, when it comes to various plays. So if you didn't see it in, you have it, right? You told me. So this is coming in, it was the second quarter. The Chiefs were facing a second and 34, and then, of course, get a few yards, but they have to go to a long third down.
Again, a four-man rush. Quick pass. Kelce at the 40. Coming all the way across the field. Flips it off. It goes to Perine. He's at the 25. He is close to a first down. Kelce, who messes around in practice doing this a lot. He thought he had a touchdown last year. Remember, on a play, he's got 21 yards. The Chiefs have fourth down and one.
Yeah. So, yes, they're able to convert that fourth down after they pick up a bunch of yards because of Kelce's lateral. And sure, well, it was lateral. It was more like a shovel. Of course, they've practiced it, but apparently that's not what they were supposed to be doing.
I'm shaking my head because I told him before the play, I said, I'm going to throw it to you so we can get in field goal range. And he underhand shoveled it across the entire field. So, I mean, it's like, it's like I'm talking to like Sterling. So that's Travis, man. He's a special player. And as long as he does it and it works, man, no one's going to say anything.
Of course, Patrick Mahomes referring to his toddler daughter, Sterling. And I'm wondering, Pete, if you can identify, considering the age of your kiddos, try to tell them something, and then they just go off and do whatever it is they want, and it's almost like you didn't say anything at all.
That's every day.
How old is your daughter now?
My daughter is about 16 months, and my son is 4. It happens a lot with my son.
Is your daughter talking now?
She's saying words.
Aww.
She's saying words, but not full sentences yet, obviously. But yeah, she's pointing to things. She's identifying things.
She's chattering.
Chattering. Yes.
I do love little kid chatter. That's my favorite. So
very, very peaceful.
Oh, that's sweet. I know you get to spend a lot of time with her in the mornings now, as tired as you are. But pretty soon she's going to be in that same situation. You tell her to do something. Doesn't matter. I'm going to do whatever she wants.
Oh, yeah. No. What is Daddy saying? Oh, no. Don't follow that. Go do something else.
I love to hear Patrick Mahomes talk about his kiddos. And if I'm not mistaken, they have a third one on the way. I don't think they've had their third kiddo yet. I'll have to check. But I know that Brittany Mahomes, she was sporting a big baby bump for his birthday. So I don't think they've had their third child yet. But yeah, cute family. They like to share photos every now and then. Okay. At A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, coming up, just a quick couple minutes. See what I mean about being hungry, stomach growling, how it's harder to talk? A couple of minutes with Mary Kay Cabot, who not only asked a pertinent question of Kevin Stefanski on Monday during his press conference, but is kind of giving us the lay of the land from inside the Browns facilities. And while there's always hope, this is not the start they expected in Cleveland. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I have to coach better. As offensive coaches, we have to coach better. As players, we have to play better. Deshaun can play better. He will play better. He's had some obviously good moments, and then there's times that we have to play better around him. But he's committed to getting better. We're committed as an offense to putting our guys in position to succeed. This is not a one-person type of deal. When we're playing how we're playing on offense, we need everybody to do their job and do their job better. And I look at myself and how I can do that. But I believe in Deshaun. I believe in what he brings to this offense, and I believe he will play better.
Hits, misses, and messes. Time to talk football after hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of Kevin Stefanski. A lot of chatter around the offense, the quarterback, of course, because the QBs always absorb way too much of the blame. Of course, they get way more of the credit when things go right, but that's not the case for the Browns. And Deshaun Watson right now, certainly under fire. I put a post out on Twix on Sunday, and the responses I got indicate that many Browns fans are extremely frustrated with what they're getting from the offense, which right now is last in the league in total yards. Our friend Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com also posed a question to Kevin Stefanski on Monday, and it was significant because we also talked to her earlier on the show. But she asked Coach about turning the play calling duties over to OC Ken Dorsey.
I think there's a bunch of different things, Mary Kay, that we want to look at and see how we're doing from a operations standpoint on offense. I think Ken's been an outstanding partner in all of this. So those are the type of things that I will always look at. But really, it just gets back to making sure that we're putting our guys in position.
We appreciated Mary Kay's time earlier on the show. She said actually her husband went to the Guardians-Tigers game 2 in Cleveland, but wanted to ask her about the offense and, of course, about Deshaun Watson. And so we'll pick up just a little bit of this interview. I asked her, what were Kevin Stefanski's reasons for sticking with Deshaun at QB?
He 100% believes that it's just a systemic problem on offense. It's not just Deshaun Watson, but it's a lot of those things that I mentioned before. It's injuries along the offensive line, the inability to protect Deshaun, which I know it's not as simple as that. It's everyone together works on that protection and getting rid of the ball quickly enough and those kinds of things. But Kevin Stefanski really believes that it is a system-wide, scheme-wide offensive problem, not just a Deshaun problem. So we'll have to see. I wrote a column today saying that I think that he should turn the play calling over to Ken Dorsey. I just think they need to do something to shake things up, to change things up. And if he's going to stick with Deshaun, then something's got to give.
I saw that column. I'm glad you mentioned it. I was going to bring it up. What do we know about other alternatives? How could that pose fresh perspective?
Well, you never really know if it's going to work or not, but it's something that you can try. It's something that you can do that you can always go back on it if you had to. I think it would be easier to turn the play calling over to Ken Dorsey, and then if you decided 3 or 4 games into it that wasn't working, I don't think it would be the end of the world if Kevin had to take it back. I think it would be difficult to bench Deshaun and then try to reinstate him 3 or 4 games down the road. And if it doesn't work, then really sometimes all is lost. I do think that shaking it up might help in the same way. Look at what happened to the Bills last year. Mm. Ken Dorsey was not the problem necessarily on that offense, but nevertheless, it did the trick in some way. They went 6-1 after they fired Ken Dorsey. The offensive numbers really didn't change all that much, but there was something about the fact that it seemed to wake up that offense or wake up that football team. So in the same way, I think it could possibly happen for the Browns, where changing it up just kind of brings everybody back together.
You can find Mary Kay's columns on cleveland.com/Browns. It's covered the team for a long time and with us here after hours with Amy Lawrence. Well, let's talk about the quarterback position, because I put a post up on Sunday watching the offense, which right now is last in the league in total yards through 5 weeks. And I mentioned the guaranteed money for Deshaun, and I got back a flood. Now, this is fans, but a flood of fans who believe a change is necessary. This is an embarrassing situation. Former NFL quarterback Dan Orlovsky's called it the worst situation in the NFL. I know that it's not all his fault, but what do you see with the quarterback specifically?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, in the first 3-4 games of the season, I really did believe that Deshaun just wasn't getting enough help. He wasn't getting protected. He's been sacked 26 times. The Browns, I think, overestimated the ability of their offensive tackles to come back from their knee surgeries. These guys have either not been playing or they have been struggling. There have been plenty of issues along that offensive line that haven't helped. Amari Cooper got off to a very slow start. David Njoku wasn't out there. There were a lot of reasons why this offense just was not playing up to its standards. But this past game was really, really a rough game. I have to watch it over again. But this was the first game when I looked out there and I thought, something just is not right here. And I really did wonder if Deshaun wasn't more of the reason than I believed he was in like the first 3 games of the season, or the first 4 games of the season. So I don't think benching him is the right decision right now, because I think, again, it would be very, very hard to go back to him after 3 or 4 games if it doesn't work out.
True.
But they've got to figure out a way that he can get the ball out of his hand quickly. Everyone is just blitzing the heck out of them. They're not picking it up. They're not handling the stunts. They're not handling the games. Deshaun is really, really struggling against the blitz. That's when most of the sacks are coming. They have to find a way that he can function, because right now it is so dysfunctional that he cannot move the chains.
There is a moment in the game against the Commanders where it appeared, now this is on TV, but it appeared as though Kevin Stefanski wanted to go for it on 4th down, and Deshaun decided not to, walked off the field, went to the sidelines. At least on social media, there was a lot made of that exchange. Any talk about it afterwards?
Yes, there was plenty of talk about that afterwards. And when you break it all down and when you talk to the people involved, he walked off of that field because there were 12 men in the huddle and they had just burned a timeout a couple of plays before that, and there was still plenty of time left, and they didn't want to be burning another timeout there so soon after that. So he walked off the field because there were 12 men in the huddle. He knew that they were going to just have to take the delay and go ahead and kick that field goal.
Gotcha.
So it was a miscommunication, but he's taking plenty of heat for that.
Okay, so that debunks at least the myth that Deshaun Watson quit on his team, which is something I saw on social during the Browns-Commanders game on Sunday. I also saw people saying the relationship was broken between him and Stefanski, and that Deshaun was afraid to get hit. He's refusing to go on 4th down. I mean, this is where truth is optional on social media. This is not Truth Social. It's optional Truth Social. And so I just wanted to make sure that you heard that part and that it's cleared up. Now, I'm not saying that Deshaun Watson is the right quarterback. It's just he's the quarterback and the Browns are paying him a lot of guaranteed money, and there's really no easy way to get out of that contract. And maybe if not for the issue with Deshaun Watson making all this guaranteed money, they've got more to spend elsewhere on, say, offensive linemen. Just spitballing here. And so I do appreciate that Mary Kay has got some ideas about what they can do. Now, I would encourage you, if you're Browns fans or maybe AFC North fans, to go and get the rest of that interview, because I also asked her about the temperature inside the building and whether or not there's still a spirit of hope, meaning whether or not they still believe that they can turn the ship around, turn the Titanic around. And her answer may surprise you. So our podcast is available moments after the show is done, or give it 15 minutes or so, with producer Pete. You can find the link always at Amy After Hours. It's an evergreen link, so you can use any of our previous podcast links. And in addition, you can tell your smart speaker to play After Hours with Amy Lawrence. It's really funny. My new mother-in-law, I think she knows the difference between a podcast and a blog, but I swear she always gets it backwards. So Pete, she's always telling me how much she enjoyed listening to my blog. And then she'll come back to me and she'll say, "So I read your podcast." Oh, okay.
Oh, at least in the right building, maybe in the wrong room.
Right. It's the correct industry, correct house, just not in the right room of the house. I like that. Yeah, she's so funny. And then she'll ask me too, "Have you found a new podcast yet?" God, yeah, so she really does want to be involved in my career. And she tells me that she really loves our Wednesday morning podcast. So she never calls it a show. I don't think she really, I'm not sure if she recognizes that we actually do the show live. Maybe she just thinks it's on tape. But she tells me she really loves the one she gets on Wednesdays. And I'm pretty sure it's because it's Ask Amy Anything. And she gets stories about her son. I'm pretty sure that's why she loves it.
I think you should name it then Ask Amy Anything blog and make it a podcast and really confuse her.
Yeah, that's right. And then maybe one day it's not there and she doesn't know what to do. Oh no, what happened to your blog?
You mean the podcast? Oh yeah, okay.
Oh yeah.
Who's on first thing.
So apparently I don't actually have a radio show. It's just those other things. It's fine. It's totally fine. All right, coming back, our defensive player of the week, a miraculous moment for a guy they call Kerry Bonds. That's quite the nickname for the Detroit Tigers slugger, who took his big bat into a scoreless tie in the top of the ninth. Two outs, two strikes. Man, it was one of those moments where legends are made in October. Just a cool day for the American League Central yet again. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Amy, well, a bit of a grind, but the Chiefs able to put things away in the fourth.
Kelce's in a wildcat position. They're going to give it off to Worthy on the right side. Worthy sneaks into the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City, on an RPO handoff from Travis Kelce.
Xavier Worthy giving the Chiefs the breathing room they needed as they down the Saints 26-13. Call courtesy of the Chiefs Radio Network. Patrick Mahomes threw for 331, finding Juju Smith-Schuster seven times for 130 yards. Kareem Hunt added a buck two on the ground and a score as the Chiefs remain perfect. 5-0. Saints dropped to 2-3, and now they're concerned about Derek Carr. He left with an oblique injury. MRI to come. Elsewhere, Patriots safety Jabril Peppers pleaded not guilty after he was arrested for assault and battery, strangulation, and drug possession believed to be cocaine. Raiders still unclear who their starting quarterback will be as Gardner Minshew replaced late again by Aiden O'Connell in the lopsided loss to the Broncos. Meanwhile, Packers head coach Matt LaFleur looking to put to bed his one-game suspension for wideout Romeo Dobbs after the two sat down for a meeting.
I'm not going to get into the specifics of it, but I think it was productive, and we look forward to getting him back on Wednesday.
Baseball, Kerry Carpenter, a three-run shot off Emmanuel Clase in the ninth as the Tigers sounds the Guardians 3-0.
In those moments, he can change the scoreboard, he can change the game, he can... He does it time after time, but you got to have guys do something in front of him in order to give him that opportunity. And, you know, we had 3 2-out hits against the best closer in baseball.
Tigers manager A.J. Hinch has got 7 scoreless innings, a 3-hit ball from Tarek Skubal, 8 Ks. Tigers and Guardians all even at a game apiece. Meanwhile, the Royals looking to even up their series with the Yankees.
One ball, two strikes against him. Here's the pitch. Bam lines it into right center field. That splits the gap of base hit. Gurriel rounds third. He comes in to score standing. Tommy Pham delivers. He gives the Royals the lead in the top of the fourth with an opposite field RBI single.
A lead they never relinquished as the Royals double the Yankees 4-2. Call courtesy of the Royals Radio Network. Salvador Perez went deep. Mikel Garcia 4 hits in an RBI. And Chase Carlos Rodon, after 3 2/3, give up 4 runs on 7 hits as the series is tied at 1. I'm Marco Belletti.
It's a Touchdown Tuesday on After Hours.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
One man to beat 10. He's gone.
They throw in the end zone. Touchdown! Hey, the guy missed. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown! Southern Salting into the end zone. Touchdown!
To cast your vote for the TD of the week, give us a call at 855-212-4227. The Dallas Cowboys.
For the ballgame, fourth and goal. Prescott in the gun, snap is back. He has some time. He throws it in the end zone. It's a touchdown to Jalen Tolbert on the left side of the end zone, crossing in front of Deshaun Elliott with 20 seconds to play. Goodness gracious me.
The Jacksonville Jaguars.
Four-man front for the Colts. Trevor drops and looks. Fires deep downfield. Got a man. That's Brian Thomas Jr. 50 in the Colts territory. 35, 30, 25, 10, 5. Touchdown. Brian Thomas Jr. just went 85 yards. How good is that? And the Jags have taken the lead.
The Baltimore Ravens.
Second and goal. Ball just outside the Bengals 6. Justice Hill in the backfield. Lamar in the shotgun. Lamar bobbles the snap. Has to pick it up off the turf. He's being chased. Corralled. Stiff arms a man. Stan Hubbard. And finally slings in the back of the end zone. Touchdown! Isaiah Likely. Oh, my. Unbelievable. Lamar Jackson bobbled the snap. Picked it up off the turf, stiff-armed Sam Hubbard, a la Derrick Henry, extended the play, threw back across his body, and hit the tight end. In other words, he did everything wrong for the perfect outcome.
The Denver Broncos.
Gain of 8, first down to goal Raiders at the Denver 5. Minshew under center. Minshew with a play fake, rolling to his left. Now floats one too high. It's going to be intercepted at the goal line. Down the west sideline, intercepted. This is past Sertan. Sertan's going to house call it. 25-20, 15-10, 5, touchdown.
That final call with Dave Logan on Broncos Radio. And Pat Sertan, briefly, the highest paid quarterback in the NFL this year. He has 2 interceptions, but that's the one that goes 100 yards the other direction. Also, a couple of tackles in there. And right now, he is the veteran. He's the veteran for the Broncos and their defensive captain. The Defensive Player of the Week, sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces DOD, veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Did Sertan's interception, second one, off Gardner Minshew, force the Raiders to make a quarterback change? That's kind of the space that we're in right now in the AFC West. We'd love for you to vote for TD of the week. The other candidates, Lamar Jackson with the stiff arm, the last touchdown of the game between the Ravens and Bengals, that wild affair, the call with Jerry Sandusky on Ravens Radio. Also, Brian Thomas, birthday present for Trevor Lawrence, 85-yard touchdown grab that may have signaled a change and a shift for the Jaguars. Frank Frangie with the call, and then the Jalen Tolbert game-winning touchdown, 20 seconds to go on Sunday Night Football. It was just shy of 1 o'clock in the morning in Pittsburgh, but Dak Prescott, with all of his struggles in the red zone, is able to find his target on fourth down for the Cowboys to beat the Steelers. So you can vote at Amy After Hours, also on our Facebook page. Now, we haven't done this in a while, but I've actually mentioned it to producer Pete, just because we've had so much transition and different guys were filling in all summer long. But the boom moment of the week is so appropriate for this time of the year, just because there's so much happening. So coming up this Friday, we're going to try to get back to that. Also, I do love, wait, hold on, that wasn't a good one. There we go. Facepalm Friday. Pete, the thing is, you're required to do the facepalm right in front of the microphone if we do Facepalm Friday. But it's kind of the opposite. It's the bonehead moments versus the moments that you'll never forget. Well, I kind of feel like we don't have to look much further than a scoreless tie, game 2 of the American League Division Series on the shores of Lake Erie. Tigers have already seen their ace depart the game after going seven scoreless, of course, but giving up just three hits, striking out eight. Tarik Skubal was brilliant, and yet still, the Tigers could not get any runs across the plate. Multiple times, they had guys in scoring position and just could not come up with a big hit, including the eighth inning when Stephen Kwan, now I know there's controversy here, still shots, still photos, they're everywhere. Stephen Kwan makes a running, diving catch of a ball that was sinking into left field and would have at least scored a run, if not more than that. And so ninth inning, Tigers against Emmanuel Clase, and they've already got the Guardians have already got two outs, and Kerry Carpenter is facing a count in which he's got two strikes.
2-2, Sweeney takes off, fly ball right field. This one's deep. Going back is Brennan. He's looking up, and it's gone! Oh, man! Kerry Carpenter with two outs in the ninth. A three-run bomb, and the Tigers take the lead 3-0.
Yeah, I knew it was gone, and it was just an amazing feeling being able to come through for this team, because our pitchers are keeping us in these games like crazy. And it's amazing to be able to come through for our pitching staff.
Everybody knows it. It's no secret that he's a big threat, and he's prepared, and he's as balanced a human as you're going to get, which allows him to stay grounded in whatever we ask him to do. So, we missed him a ton during the year.
Yeah, if you don't remember the story and the arc of the Tigers, they were languishing near the bottom of baseball in scoring because Kerry was out with a back injury. When he returned, it coincided with their rise. Remember, they were 10 games back in the American League Central in mid-August. But once he got back to the lineup, this is why they call him Kerry Bonds, because he was pounding the baseball. And to do it off Emmanuel Clase, that's humongous. And so a victory for the Tigers in Cleveland. And now that series will get back to Comerica Park. So really exciting for the Tigers to be able to host a playoff game for the first time in more than a decade, or in a decade, I should say. And the Royals, they continue what has been their improbable run, coming up with four runs in the fourth inning at Yankee Stadium on Tuesday or Monday evening. Sorry about that. It's Tuesday morning, and it's so much information in my head. So they get a Salvador Perez home run that starts the rally, and they're able to beat the Yankees. And that's huge, too, because all four of the division series are now knotted at one game apiece. So all four of them. That's not happened since 1995. Get it. That's good stuff. I'm thinking some game fives, maybe some game sevens. But you can vote for the TD of the week. Take the pressure off. I'm going to stop talking for a while, get some food. We're back tonight. We'll do more of that defense because it wins championships. And also, we'll catch up on the National League. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I swear to God, I'm not a lunatic.